Torahway, Northwest London, Vov Nissan, 28th of March, Rabbi Malcolm Herman Schlitter, Divrei Torah for Seder Night. Announcement on the poster to remind people that there is a Yeshivas Bein Azmanim in the evenings, I think. Doesn't say what time it is, but it's from Sunday to Tuesday, especially for Yeshiva Bochrim, Matan Schorim B'Tzidon.
So my focus is going to be on Divrei Torah that are, I was going to call it, sayable on Seder night. In my experience, that means Divrei Torah that are short and compact, but communicate important messages, as opposed to more complex shtiklach. So that's this. I'm sharing what I feel is my style, and hopefully that will suit you. But let's start off with a beautiful concept, beautiful idea, which can be used in different points of Seder night. I'm going to show how it could be used. But we know that the Arba Kosos represent the four expressions of freedom at the beginning of Parshas Vayera. But what I hadn't noticed till this year, thanks to the Be'er Yosef, is that there's an interesting nuance in the four expressions of freedom. So the first one, I will take you out from the burdens of Egypt. I will rescue you from their labor. I will redeem you. And you shall know, again, now, is anybody, I'm just curious, if there's any me that didn't notice it, I'm looking for a bit of comfort over here. Anybody know the difference between sivlos and sivlos there? Anyone come across?
Probably one's got a vav and one hasn't.
The first one has not got a vav, even though it's read as sivlos, but it is written without a vav. Without a vav, the implication is it could be read as sivlas, which would be in the singular. And the second one has a vav, sivlos. I have to say, as I said, I've never noticed that before. Be'er Yosef has the following pshat. In essence, Klal Yisrael, as we know and we shall see, suffered two great indignities, two great areas of avdus and pain, the physical and the spiritual. The physical pain, the labor camps, the back-breaking servitude that they had to go through, the perach, etc. The absolute terrible 80 years of cruelty and torture. But they also suffered a second dimension of avdus, and that was the fact that they'd almost lost a sense of who they were, almost lost a sense of their history, almost lost a sense of the prestige of being part of the Zera, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They almost lost that. But because they were so overwhelmed with the physical pain, it wasn't that was uppermost in their minds. The physical pain dominated so unbelievably that they didn't even realize what they'd lost. Therefore, in the beginning, on the first of these promises, the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, the first stage is mitachas sivlos sivlas mitzrayim. It's spelt in the singular, implying that there was only really one pain that dominated. They lost track of the other pain. However, once it gets to the point of lakachti eschem lila'am, the final stage where Hashem says, I will take you for me as a people. So there's four stages. I will rescue you. I will take you out. I will rescue you. I will take you to me as a people, right? I will redeem you. Which really is a reference to Matan Torah. At that point in time, Klal Yisrael will then realize that not only were they saved from the physical pain, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu restored their spiritual essence, their spiritual dimension, and gave that back to them. And in retrospect, they'll be able to say, oh, you know, we hadn't realized how far we'd sunk, how detached we were, how we almost lost our connection with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Beautiful pshat. But it goes further. And it can be touched, and it touches it magnificently in the Haggadah itself. If you look at the Haggadah, in the middle of the psukim that the Haggadah touches, Vanitzek al Hashem. So, and personally, I believe a Seder night should be as interactive as possible. So at this point in the Seder, I'm going to ask the Mishpacha, those around the table, to look at these three psukim, and to look at the different ways in which there is an interaction with Hashem. So we have the Pasuk, Vanitzek al Hashem l'keir v'seinu. So the Haggadah brings this major Pasuk, and then every phrase is almost like, as you would say today, it's almost like a hyperlink. And you click on each phrase, and the phrase is then elaborated. So let's look at the elaboration. So when the Haggadah elaborates on Vanitzek al Hashem l'keir v'seinu, what does it mean? it quotes Vayibam El Mahim and the King of Mitzrayim died. Vayyeh Onuchu B'nei Yisrael Min HaAvoda. Klal Yisrael cried out from what? Only from the Avoda. Right? Vayizaku. What's Hashem's response? Vatal Shavosam El Elokim Min HaAvoda. Hashem heard that they were so overwhelmed with the Avoda that dominated, there was nothing else. Hashem received their. So initially Hashem receives their tefillah, but it's only about the Avoda. Then it says, Vayishma Hashem Es Koleinu. Hashem heard our voice, which means, Vayishma Kim Es Nakosam, Vayizko Elokim Es Briso Es Avram, it says of Yaakov. Even though they only cried out because the Avoda, but Hashem recalled, this is B'nai Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they may not even realize it. They hardly realize it anymore. They hardly realize it anymore. But Hashem remembered, there's much more to rescue over here than simply the physical pain. We've got to rescue them from the spiritual collapse, the spiritual devastation the Klal Yisrael are feeling. And then it says, we saw their affliction. It says, Hashem saw the children of Israel and God knew. I would translate this more than knew. God knew, God understood. God understood the situation that Klal Yisrael was so overwhelmed with physical pain that they couldn't even relate to the spiritual pain. Couldn't even relate to the spiritual pain. And therefore, as the Bar Yosef puts it, in the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there was almost a geula mechupeles. A geula mechupeles. A double geula. A geula from the physical and a geula from the spiritual. But the geula from the spiritual was only recognized, realized, appreciated in retrospect. He doesn't say this, but I wonder, actually I haven't looked into this, but I wonder, you know, the paragraph following Dayenu, which basically is a repeat of Dayenu. Tova kufula umuchu peles. A double tova. Maybe that's a good reference. Double tova, not only from the physical pain, but at this point in time, post-redemption, when we can look back at what we almost lost, then it's a tova umuchu peles. He didn't say that. Anyway, so that is the vart. And it, as I say, it could either be brought in at the beginning of Seder night with the abrakosos. It could be brought in at this point when it's a kalashem to create it interactively. I want to add an interesting idea to bring this alive. And I'm presenting different ideas that will be suitable for different Seder night tables. And one story that goes with it as well. I did a little bit of research recently, just for fun really, as to how many are there national lottery winners that are totally unaware of their win. So at the moment, there are 4 national lottery winners who won £1 million in February. Won £1 million in February. And there was one who won £1 million in November, unclaimed prizes. One somebody in November won £10,000 every month, unclaimed prizes. You look on the National Lottery website. So I'm thinking to myself, maybe these people are struggling with the cost of living crisis and how to make ends meet and how to fill their car with petrol, how to go and do a Tesco shop, and they don't realise that somewhere amongst their belongings, they've got this little piece of paper, and really, they've got it all there. They've got it all there. But they don't even realise. They're so overwhelmed with the current crisis that they don't understand that they actually have who they really are. So I have to share with you a story from Rabbi Twersky, which I heard myself from Rabbi Twersky. It's also brought in one of his books, From Pulpit to Pouch, to Couch. Great, great story. I'm going to make it short because there's so much more to say, but it illustrates this point very beautifully, especially if there are those around the table that need chizuk in this area, as you'll see. He was speaking at a rehabilitation centre in Israel. Rehabilitation centre in Israel. And all of the prisoners in this rehabilitation centre have been in there for drug offences. And he said to them, as I said, I heard it myself from him and it's in his book, he said to them, it's a strange thing because as human beings we generally appreciate beauty. And so why should a human being destroy something beautiful? Only because they don't really appreciate the beauty. So saying that a person's born, a person's given a guf, which is a heiligazach, which is a choshevazach, and to take drugs is to destroy that. How can they do that? Only because they don't really appreciate the beauty of themselves. In the audience is a guy, they called him Avi in the book, and he puts up his name and he says, Rabbi, you got this one wrong. I'm 34 years old, listen to this, I've been in prison for 16 out of 34 years. 16 out of 34 years, there's no beauty in me. My family don't want me back, I'm coming out of prison, they're not even interested, I'm not going to get a job. So he sits down with him, he says to him, Avi, but Edson, you're a diamond. You're a diamond. Anybody who's seen, you know, diamonds as they come out of the ground, right, they're encrusted. They don't look like diamonds. You know, diamond is just not of us, but life has kind of piled on top of it, all of that stuff. And he tries to convince him that he has that potential. He goes to the rehabilitation centre, actually does manage to find himself some kind of job. One day, the lady who runs the rehabilitation centre says to him, Avi, I've got a job for you. Not that type of job, I've got a proper job for you. There's a lady who's passed away, she's left some furniture, could you go and pick it up? It's being donated to the centre. Sure. So he gets a van, goes to this lady's house, bringing in the sofa down the stairs, and outside from the sofa falls out an envelope stuffed with 5,000 shekel in notes. Nobody else knows that it exists. This lady, for some reason, didn't trust the banks. Can't think why. Didn't trust the banks. And she'd stuffed some cash in an envelope. No one else knew it existed. The family didn't know. The supervisor didn't know. Only he knew existed. So, if I was telling this a statement, right, I would say, what do you think was going through his head at that point in time? He'd broken into houses and cars for much, much less than that. Much less than that. But he was Miskaba Alizieitzer, and he called the supervisor and said, I found this money. It doesn't belong to me. What should I do with it? I contacted the family. I think the family donated it, in fact, to the center. Sometime later, Rabbi Tversky's in Eteshon, and they asked him to come for the inaugural opening of this center. And he comes there, and there's a plaque which Avi has created and unveils that says, Welcome to the Diamond Polishing Center. Now, why is it such a good story for Seyd Night? Because really, the ultimate godless that a Yid can suffer is when they forget that they are a Yid, when they forget the real value. When it gets to a point where you just don't know anymore who you are, and you've lost touch with that essence and with who a person is, that there's no worse godless. That's not just godless haguf. That's godless haneshama, and there's no worse godless. So at Seyd Night, we remind ourselves. I want so elsewhere as well. In a way, that's almost why the Afikoman is hidden. The Afikoman is hidden because it reminds us of the hidden part of Yid that's indestructible, and sometimes it gets lost. And through the Seyd Night, it reemerges. Through the Seyd Night, we reinforce that every single Yid, wherever they are, wherever they've been through, wherever they feel, but etzem, they are a diamond. Okay, I'm going to share smaller thoughts to take us through, but let me just start with one which actually connects with this very well from a fantastic Haggadah, the Haggadah of the Novominsk Rebbe. I think it's a fantastic Haggadah. But he answers a kasha that we have, which comes up a few times on Seyd Night. How many years was the goddess? Like 430 years in one place, Torah says 400 years, 210 years would do, go down to Mitzrayim. It was quite confusing exactly how many years was the goddess. He explains this very, very clearly, that the Bris Ben Hamesorim was 430 years before the Gula. Leidas Yitzchok was 400 years. He actually brings, I think it was from the Maharal, that really, but why was that? As soon as the announcement of the Gezerah was given to Avraham Avinu, Kigeya Zarecha, etc., but Avdim Inu Osam, then he fell to Shtikel in Golus. Rachman al-Islam, if there's a decree, even if the decree is going to be delayed, when Haman made his decree, they felt that decree the minute the decree was written. Right? Not, they didn't say, well, you know, we've got time till it starts, we can relax till, no. So he says, that's the 430 years. But really, Yitzchok was a ger, insofar as the land had been promised to his father, and he wasn't yet resident of the land. So therefore, we backdated to Yitzchok. But they were actually in Mitzrayim for 210 years, which was Yaakov Avinu. Interesting, he says, so why was it, essentially, if you notice, that Yaakov's quota of Golus was fulfilled in full. The 210 years were there for 210 years. But the Pashtus of Avram's quota of Golus, the Pashtus was 430 years in Golus, or 400 years in Golus. That wasn't fulfilled in full. That was reduced. That was reduced. So why was that? He said, and it ties in with this first war. Because the influence of Avram in Yitzchak was almost lost. But because Yaakov Avinu came down to Mitzrayim with Klal Yisrael, therefore his influence was retained. So therefore, they could go through the whole of the 210 years, and at least they retained some association with Yaakov Avinu, because he'd been there, his influence had been there. But because Yitzchak had long passed on, and Avram had long passed on, there was a great, great danger that that aspect of them would be totally lost. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chishev Es HaKeitz, which he calculates, I would call it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did some creative accountancy. Maybe that's the makar, but Klal Yisrael's ability in this area, creative accountancy. In other words, our Kodesh Baruch Hu decided that even though that wasn't the pashtus of the promise, he would backdate it to the time of Yitzchak and backdate it to the time of the Bris Ben Hamesorim. Because otherwise Klal Yisrael would have lost their connection to Avraham and Yitzchak. So in other words, originally it was supposed to be 400 years or 430 years, but because they were going to lose that connection, that's what means Chishev Ves HaKeitz. He recalculated the end by backdating the beginning such that they could be rescued at a time when it was still possible to save Klal Yisrael. So I've said that, hey, even though it's a little bit out of sequence in terms of what I want to say, because it fits, it's in an extension, the fact that we'd almost lost our connection to our origins. And let me share with you, because I'm sure there are going to be different ages around the table, a very beautiful story of, with reference to the Arba Vonim. And that is, came across in the Haggadah of Rav Spiro. He's got touched by a Seder. He's got two Haggadahs, one touched by a story. This particular one, which I think is new for this year, also got outstanding material in my view, touched by a Seder. He actually doesn't say this in the Abra Bonim, but I think it's an appropriate place to put it in. And he brings a story, because in essence, the Arba Bonim, first of all, it's interesting, we'll come back to that, he touches the Chochom, he notes that he's called a Chochom, he's not called a Tzaddik. Interesting. He's called a Chochom, I noticed that before, he's called a Chochom, not called a Tzaddik. And we'll come back to the answer to him in a minute. But he brings the following story, because in essence, the Arba Bonim is about seeing the strength in every child, bringing out the best in every child. So he brings the story of an old water carrier with the yoke across his back, came two buckets. One bucket was a bucket in good condition, a pristine bucket. The other bucket was a bit worse for wear, and a couple of holes here and there. And the pristine bucket used to brag to the other bucket, you know, I look so good, you know, you're a bit worn out, etc. And it was a bit of a Balgiver bucket. And it was quite hard for the smaller bucket, because the bucket felt a little bit embarrassed, ashamed, it wasn't the bucket, wasn't so good. But what happened was, as the people noticed a strange phenomenon in their shtetl, on one side of the narrow streets, in the summer, flowers grew. On the other side of the narrow streets, no flowers grew. And after a while, they worked out it was a water carrier. Because as he went up those streets, on one side, because there were holes in the bucket, it irrigated the streets and the flowers grew. On the other side, because there were no holes in the bucket, even though it looked perfect, it looked pristine, but it didn't create flowers. I think it's a beautiful story, it's a beautiful model that everybody can create flowers. Okay, some a bit earlier, some a bit later, but the tachlis and the purpose is to see every single person, every single child, to find the potential within each child and to endorse the potential of each child. And that is part of Keneged Abra Bonim Dibra Torah, because the Torah says you've got to find the right language, the right way of expressing that each child has their uniqueness and will find their uniqueness. Okay. Now, I want to give you just some pshatim, we may come back to his vort on the Chochom if time allows, but some pshatim, which are all based on the Ramban. This is a Haggadah, the Ramban on the Haggadah, but it brings all the references, you can look it up yourself. But just some pshatim in the Haggadah itself. Later on, when Avraham Avinu comes down to Mitzrayim, Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim, he says, we only came to sojourn. We're not coming here to settle, we're coming to sojourn. The Orachaim, by the way, on the Pasuk over here, notes that Yaakov came down, and his request was a very, very modest request. He could have said, you know my son? No, my son's Yosef. You know my son? So, you know, we'd like a nice plot of land. He could have used protexia. But actually, that wasn't his start. He came down with humility. We've just come to sojourn. We have a problem. If you could help us resolve it, we'd be very grateful. The Orachaim notes that they came down with humility. They didn't come down feeling entitled. So that's one pshat. Just shot him in Pesukim. And then he says, Ke'ein mir latona shela avodacha. Ramban asks, the kasha, which, again, one of those kashas that you think, how's I never thought about that before? One second. They came down to Mitzrayim to look for pastures for their flock. But surely the famine was more severe in Mitzrayim than it was in Canaan. Right? The epicenter of the famine was in Mitzrayim. So why would there be more pasture in Mitzrayim than there would be in Canaan, where they'd come from? Simple kasha, pshat. And the Ramban, on the Pesukim over there. So he gives two pshatim. I'll give you the less novel one first. The less novel one, he says, because of the Nile. There was the Nile in Mitzrayim, and therefore it created a dampness around it, and therefore around the Nile. But the other Pshat says is very interesting. It could be that in Canaan, because they didn't have food, human beings ate grass. And therefore, because they ate grass, there was no grass for the flocks. But because in Mitzrayim they'd stockpiled food, they actually had enough food. And therefore, there was actually pasture for the cattle. Just Pshat and Pesukim there. Pshat and very interesting. Pshat and Pesukim there. Also, the Ramban notes that Poro v'yishesu v'yibru v'atzmul m'moed m'oed v'atimoni ha'aretz osam. Of course, there was one Shevet that did not have this Poro v'yishesu, Shevet Levi. And Shevet Levi, when they were counted, even though they were counted from a month old, they numbered 22,000. less than half any other tribe. Less than half any other tribe. Just again, in terms of Ashkocha Protest, to notice, it's true that they didn't suffer the servitude, but they didn't also receive the bracha. They didn't suffer the servitude, they didn't receive the bracha. So at that time, yes, I'm sure they were relieved they didn't suffer the servitude, but later on it transpired that within that servitude there was this remarkable bracha and this remarkable nes. I'm just giving now just pshatim in the Haggadah, where you can ask what's pshat over here and see what is pshat over here. Again, when it comes to the osos zehamata. So I want to share with you a beautiful extract from the Nesiv HaShalom, again on the Pesukim in Parashat Shemos on the osos. I hope I do it justice. I've been through it a few times, but I hope I can do it justice. The Nesiv HaShalom asks, really, this, if you notice, and again, this, I would do this interactively at Seder night. When Moshe Rabbeinu was given the snare, he was asked to perform various signs with the matter. With the matter and other things. And what was the difference? He was asked to give three signs. Three signs. One sign was the nachash, the matter turned into a nachash. The next sign was that his hand became leprous and then was repaired, was healed. And the third sign was to take water from the Nile and throw it and it would become blood. But there was a fundamental difference between signs 1 and 2 and number 3. Two differences. Difference number 1 was that the first two, the damage was repaired. The damage was repaired. I'm suggesting you could bring this in when it talks about the matter of Moshe Rabbeinu. The damage was repaired. And the third one, when the water was thrown down to become, the blood was thrown, the water was thrown to become, no, that wasn't repaired, wasn't taken back. Another difference. The first two, Moshe Rabbeinu had a practice run. Hashem said, had a practice run. But the third one, there was no practice run. No practice run. So, the Nesiv HaShalom has got an extensive, fascinating, beautiful maimah to explain the following. When Moshe Rabbeinu came to the snare, then in many respects, the snare was of course, we know the snare was a moshel for Klal Yisrael, a snare and then an ukal, that even though it was engulfed in flames, it seemed to be indestructible. But it was also a lesson for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, in certain respects, as Rashi himself and the Chumash says, couldn't see how Klal Yisrael could be redeemed. They were so steeped in the Memtes Sharitumah, they looked beyond redemption. And the snare was the first thing that Moshe Rabbeinu thought, I can see that you can have something which is engulfed in flames, and yet somehow or other, the intrinsic aspect of it is retained, is saved. So for him, that was the first realization of the message that Klal Yisrael may look as though they are engulfed in the flames of Tumah and contamination and Lashon Hara, but they can be redeemed. And then the Osos reinforced it. The first Os was the Os of the Nochosh. Now, the staff was a supportive staff. Right? It wasn't a punitive staff, it was a supportive staff, something positive. It turns into a Nochosh, which is something negative. And then it is restored to something positive. Back into a staff. The message being that the negativity of Klal Yisrael is b'mikra, it's not be'etzem. It is extrinsic, it's not intrinsic to who they are. It's extrinsic. And therefore, it can be restored. It can be restored. When you present this to Klal Yisrael, they themselves may not, you've got to believe in it, Moshe Rabbeinu. When they present this to Klal Yisrael, they've also got to believe in it. Maybe they won't believe in it, and they'll say, look, a staff is a domain, right? Okay. Think a demon can be changed, but for a Baal Bechira, we've made bad choices. Can that still be restored? The second ois comes then, which is even something that is considered to be dead. Taras, and Matsuri is Chosh of Kemes, even something that can be dead, can be restored. It can be revived. Therefore, even though if you think you're spiritually dead, you're not spiritually dead. You can be revived. So those first two, it was vital that there was this process of restoration. Because the message was, it doesn't matter where you are, you can be restored. And that was a message, the way I understand the Nesiv HaShalom, not just for Klal Yisrael, but for Moshe Rabbeinu as well. So that he would see the redemptive possibilities in Klal Yisrael, which is essential for the leader. But the third Os was nothing to do with the restoration. The third Os was to show Klal Yisrael that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could attack the Avodah Zorah of Mitzrayim, even the Nile. Now Moshe Rabbeinu had no doubt about that. He didn't need to see that, but Klal Yisrael needed to see that. And there, that's why that last one was not performed. He didn't need to do a practice run on that. The first two had a message for him as well. He had to hear that message. Before he went back as leader, he had to believe that Klal Yisrael could be redeemed, and he had to convince Klal Yisrael they could be redeemed. But first he had to see it for himself. But the third one wasn't for him. So the third one, he knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu could overturn the Nile. was of him. And also, of course, that wasn't restored, because the message was, we're gonna dismantle Mitzrayim and it will not be restored. Just a beautiful shot. I also recommend the kasha that's often asked, that when you come to... So I want to say one thing about the Makkos. So as I'm sure many of you know, I work for Seed, and we do a share on our website with very creative, interactive ideas for Seder night. I just want to share one with you. You can download it from our website. We've created this year a very, very simple... Well, it's the game is very simple, but actually doing the game is not so simple. And it has a very powerful message in it. The game is where you've got pictures of Paro and the Chatumi Mitzrayim and the Avodim, and there's pictures as they go through the Makkos. And you see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu dismantles Paro and dismantles the regime. Next to the pictures, you've got headlines from the Cairo Times, many of which mirror Pesukim from the Torah. And the idea is you have to match the headlines to the picture. Now, what you emerge at the end is an opportunity to really look at, and this is fascinating because it's without any fortune, just the Pesukim themselves, to see how the regime was dismantled. Example, the first two plagues, the Chatum Mitzrayim, could replicate. We know that. So the picture shows the Chatum Mitzrayim looking pretty smug, pretty complacent, right? And the headline is, you know, basically you're bringing coals to Newcastle, we can do all of this. Kinim, we know they couldn't replicate, as Ramban explains, either because it was too small or Yeshim Ayin, they couldn't do that. Now they start to look a little bit worrying. Right. And the plague of Dever is where Pharaoh sends out, is it really true that only we're being affected, not others? No. Only because there was an epidemic over here. An epidemic, you would imagine, if one animal dies, we're all going to die. It's interesting. In Shechin it says, "Lo yochla chotume yotzayim lamo lifle paro," which was a mashma that, okay, it's true that they couldn't replicate Kinim, but they stood by him. But from Shechin, they couldn't stand by him anymore. They disappeared out of the scene. Right, so the picture shows you've now got Paro, the Avodim Manat, the Chatum Mitzrayim. Then when it comes to Arabia, for example, the servants of Mitzrayim turn their back on Paro and say, Haterem Teda, don't you know, Ki Avda Oretz, the land is gone. So once you've got the whole pattern out, it gives an opportunity to really look through and show how the plagues were a systematic dismantling of Mitzrayim, not just in the regime in a military sense, but in a hashkofa sense, and demonstrating the ultimate power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu ready for Geulas Mitzrayim. We're going to run out of time, which I suppose is predictable. Let me share with you one more vort and make the difficult decision of one more story. The vort, everyone asks the kasha, Inu kervonu v'nei Har Sinai v'lo nos l'lon nos haTorah. If you would have come to Har Sinai and not given us the Torah. Maybe I'll just give you the reference. If you learn in the Ramban, in Perek Chof, Pasuk Tez Zayin, in Shemos, has an absolutely fantastic description of the process of what it meant to be at Har Sinai. And how, on that morning of Har Sinai, the experience that Klal Yisrael had. If you just, and it's worthwhile reading out the Seder night. Worth reading out Seder night, because once you read that, you realize, even if they just arrived at Har Sinai and hadn't heard a word from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was the most overwhelming experience. And they had no doubt there was a Bayre Olam. And they saw Nisim Gunuim. Just that. If you could have read it at Har Sinai, but then not the Torah, if you learn the Ramban, it isn't a kasha at all. Because that itself was a very, very powerful experience. I think I've got 40 seconds left to squeeze in one final story. This is a chizuk story, and it's brought by Rav Grossman. Now, Grossman from Migdal Or, Migdal Emek, a very famous Rav Grossman. They asked for a book about him now, a living legend. I've had the schus of meeting him a couple of times. But very bekitzer, he has a sefer on Chumash, Gimitaron Chumash in Ivrit. And he tells a story about his great grandfather. His great grandfather in 1870. Went from Israel to Eastern Europe to visit his Rebbe, the Kalina Rebbe. On the way back, obviously they went by boat, on the way back they were in a small boat, and the seas were very, very stormy. And their path was diverted, and they got caught up in the bowels of a large passenger ship. And it looked as though it was Ochon Vein, they were going to drown, there's no way they could survive this. So they shouted out to the captain of the passenger ship, this was on Erev Shabbos, to rescue them. And the passenger ship was a Russia and an anti-Semite. And he said, yeah, I'll rescue all of you apart from the Jews. And he lowers down the ropes to bring up only the non-Jews and not the Jews. So Nebuchadnezzar, the Jews are stuck in this little boat, you know, out of control because it's stuck in the bowels of this other boat. But it's Erev Shabbos. So he says, comes Shkia. So his great-grandfather opens his case, takes out his strimal, straightens his pears, and begins singing. Singing to Tehillim, singing the Baal Shem Tov's introduction to Shabbos, singing like it wasn't like nothing else was going on. I mean, Machazik, those on the boat, and singing the appropriate Tehillim about Kodesh Baruch Hu's rescue of Klal Yisrael, etc. And calming them down, I said, look, Kodesh Baruch Hu's HaKol Yachol, and then we're in his hands, let's not lose our bitoch. They survive the night, the ship, little boat survives the night, and the next morning he starts davening, Sukkah de Zimra. When he comes to Oz Yashir, he says over and over again, Sus Baruch Hu Rama Bayom. Over and over again, Sus Baruch Hu Rama Bayom. Probably haven't got the right accent right, but you get the idea. Sus Baruch Hu Rama Bayom. Over and over again. And then there is this enormous wave which splits the boats. So the little boat is now set free again. Set free again. And then there is another wave in front of their eyes which actually engulfs the whole of the larger boat, and the whole of the larger boat capsizes without anybody surviving. And this smaller boat makes its way to Eretz Yisrael. Story of his own great-grandfather, after whom he is named. So mamish, a modern-day Kriyas Yam Suf, if you like, modern-day Mitzrayim, a beautiful way to share at the meal, a beautiful story to share at the meal, that if we have Bitachon, if we have Ben Emunah, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge, and we hope for the rescues that Klal Yisrael desperately needs. People need in their own individual lives, but Klal Yisrael desperately needs, and we should have a Ula Shalem.